And good morning, Bruce.
And good morning, Cora. Good morning, listeners. Wonderful to have your company, as always, on a Thursday morning for our Community Conversations program. Well, it's been a big week, hasn't it? I'm sure most of us have been watching a bit of the Olympics. We gave out our own medals here last week on our program. We selected those people who had the most downloads, the most podcasts downloads over the last 12 months. And we gave our bronze medal to Bob Gannaway talking about Anzac Day, our silver medal to Upper Yarra, Keep the Wheels Turning, Rod, Sujin and Nick. And we gave our gold medal to the amazing team at Wiree Community Bank, to Vicky and Ash and the team over there. Wow, congratulations all three of you, and a great effort. We had the amazing Ellie Hanrahan last week talking about the Healesville Community Emergency Group. And if you missed that program, another podcast for you to listen to. The next 2 weeks, we have a couple of amazing programs coming up. Next week, we're going to be talking with Nicole about wills and estates and, wow, all the complications of things that go with making a will and making it legal, and what about blended families and all of that stuff. And look forward very much. And I think you might be listening, Nicole, so a big shout out to you this morning. And the week after that, we have the amazing Megan, and we're going to be talking about partnerships and collaboration, and what are the key ingredients to good and strong partnerships and collaboration. Wow, that's amazing. Well, last night I mentioned the Olympics, and last night we had the amazing Peter Boll. I think he's a name that's on the lips of many Australians the last couple of days. A refugee from Sudan, and he did the country really proud last night, and was the first person in the 800 metre final since 1968 or something like that. An amazingly long time. Anyway, it's been a long time since we have talked about one of the most important issues that Australia has been wrestling with for, well, I don't know how many years. It's refugees and asylum seekers. And so this morning, there's no one better than Ian Gillespie, and he's my special guest via Zoom, talking about that very thing, about refugees and particularly rural Australians for refugees. And a bit of background on Ian. He told me just off air that he used to have a radio program on 3RW talking about the environment. I must admit, I didn't hear it, Ian. I'm sure it was fantastic. He's done lots of documentaries around human rights. He is obviously a journalist. He lives not so far from here, probably about 40 minutes in Panton Hill. And he is a guitarist. He plays the guitar. And today we're going to be hearing, well, some of his music on a CD, which we'll tell you more about in a moment. Ian, I'm hoping that you're there. Sorry, I'll stop talking now and introduce you. Are you with us, Ian?
I am indeed here, Bruce.
Fantastic, and absolutely delighted to have this conversation with you this morning. For our listeners, let's go back to Ian Gillespie of many years back. Ian, rural Australians for refugees. Does that mean you grew up in a rural area? Were you a country boy?
Well, no, I actually grew up in Scotland and then moved to Canada for 2 years and came out here at the age of about 10.
Oh, there you go. Well, you haven't got a Scottish accent, Ian.
Well, I still have one, you know, if I talk to someone who's Scottish.
Love it. Well done. So what took you from Scotland to Canada and then brought you from Canada to Australia?
It was the era of the Great Migration. I think it was called the 10-pound scheme, and my parents decided to go to Canada to seek a better life, and arrived there in the middle of a depression, or at least a severe recession.
Yes.
The rest of my family went on to Australia, so we went and joined them again, migrated from Canada to Australia.
Wow. So you were... I mean, I know we're talking very different times and very different circumstances, but in a sense, you and your family were refugees almost. Well, you were certainly immigrants anyway.
Well, you were incredibly lucky in comparison with the way refugees are being treated, but yeah, we're immigrants anyway.
Yes. We'll talk about that comparison in a moment. And I know, just talking with you briefly off air, that there's a huge story to be told, but can we be personal just for a moment, Ian, you were, I believe, researching a story for the Asylum Seekers Resource Centre as part of your role as a journalist with The Age, and you came across or were introduced to a young Hazara refugee by the name of Zaki. You better tell us what happened.
Well, that's basically how it all started for me. I was asked to do a four-page insert for the Australian for the Asylum Seekers Resource Centre. And so I told them, well, look, I've got to speak to an asylum seeker so I know what I'm talking about. And they put me on to a young 17-year-old who was at that stage at the Amnesty Centre in Sydney. 17-year-old called wow. Zaki. And he spoke very, very broken English, but his story to me was heartbreaking. He was an Hazara, which means that the Taliban hunts them down and kills them as a matter of genocide. His father was a doctor and had been murdered by the Taliban, and his elder brother had been murdered by the Taliban for daring to seek a Western education in Kabul. And he was receiving notes on his village door saying that he was next. So his mother organized for him somehow or other to escape. He went on a dangerous journey across Pakistan, India, and to Indonesia, then hopped on a boat, which inevitably sank, and he was rescued by the Australian Navy and taken to prison. He was expecting to find a new life, but instead found himself in detention. When I spoke to him, he'd just been released, and it was only, I think, weeks before the government announced that no boat arrival would ever stay in Australia.
Wow.
He was living in fear, basically, with other people who had been on the boat with him in a room in Sydney. And I say in fear because at that stage they were given all sorts of warnings about if they cause a disruption, if they upset the neighbours with noises, if they spit in the streets, all sorts of horrible things.
Yes.
They'd be sent back. He was given no education rights, no work rights, and a pittance, which enabled him, which meant that they had to sort of take, didn't have enough money really for food because they had to pay for the rent.
Wow.
And when I spoke to him, he was heartbroken because his father had told him that he must get an education. It had been drowned into him. So he came to Australia. There was no queue, by the way. He didn't skip anything.
Yes,
got out of the country. He was heartbroken mainly because he couldn't get an education. There were no education rights.
Wow. Ian, I'm just curious for myself. Why are the Taliban so hell-bent on killing the Hazaras? Is there a particular reason for that?
Three reasons. One is that the Hazara are regarded as coming from, they're Persian, really, in origin.
Yes.
And regarded as a different race to what the Taliban regards as Afghanistanians.
Yes.
A different branch of Islam. And also because he was seeking a Western education, there were three reasons why he was being hunted down. And as the Taliban, I was speaking to Zaki only this week, and he was telling me as the Taliban now advances further and further around Kabul, his mother and six siblings, three brothers and three sisters, are in danger of being murdered, that there will be a genocide amongst Hazara. So you can imagine those sort of feelings that he's having at the moment.
That's absolutely horrific, Ian, and very, very sobering. And I'm now feeling shameful that I even made any comparisons with your immigrating and refugees.
Well, if a pastor can tell you his story, because it's quite amazing. I thought for the first time as a journalist, you think, oh, if you write a story, you've done your bit. Okay, you pass it on. But in this case, I just couldn't sit with it. I couldn't let this go. So I rang up a number of private colleges, which he could never afford, of course.
And, yes.
One of them said they would take him on for nothing. It was absolutely
fantastic.
Fantastic. Martin's College, they were called, a wonderful group. They have colleges right around Australia. They took him on and put him through two intensive English courses, and then offered him a diploma course, which he took. And then when he had finished that, they said, "What are you going to do?" And he said, "Well, I'll just have to go back to the room because I'm not allowed to work." And said, "We can't have that." They offered him another diploma course, which he did. In the course of that, he came top. This is after not speaking English only a matter of years ago. He came top of the entire college group. He was offered a university placement, which he couldn't take because of his visa restrictions. And just to cut a long story short, he was 2 years. Where were we looking? So I met him in 2013. In 2015, 2 years later, he was named New South Wales International Student of the Year.
Wow. Wow. Wow.
He was also named City of Sydney International Student Ambassador.
Just for having been given the opportunity, Ian. Well, I'm sure he's very capable as well, but, you know. Well,
just because someone gave him an opportunity. It's an education of what we're missing out on the calibre of people that we're missing out on through these cruel policies. He became Australian National University Admissions Officer and a volunteer ambassador for the Refugee Advice and Casework Centre in Sydney. He raised money for them by running a 500-kilometre marathon.
Wow.
And last year, he was named the Australian Human Rights Commission's Human Rights Hero.
I've got to do some more research and get Zaki on the program too, I think. We'll have a break for a moment. We're going to play a selection of music this morning, listeners, from a CD that I'm holding in my hand called Homespun, and it's original songs, covers, smooth jazz, blues, folk recorded, cottages and living rooms, and live at markets by local musicians who have generously donated their talents. All proceeds from the sale of the CD will be used to support refugees and people seeking asylum. And we'll talk more about that and how you can get a copy of it. But here's the first one this morning. It's Trapped on Nauru, and it's got the name Gillespie and Patterson. So I think you might be involved in that, Ian. You play the guitar, I believe.
I do. It's not a very cheerful song. You can't write anything happy about that situation, but we thought we should have something on the CD.
There we go. Let's have a listen, everyone. My special guest on air this morning is via Zoom, the amazing Ian Gillespie, and we're talking about rural Australians for refugees and, well, some of the challenges and some of the omissions and some of the unfortunate things that are happening still every day in relation to asylum seekers and refugees. Ian, we were talking about the amazing story of Zaki and, well, if I could use this word, how you've adopted him virtually and the story of his education and what a difference that's made. And I think I might have cut you off on the end of your story there.
No, that's fine. I was just saying that after named International Student of the Year and the City of Sydney's International Student last year, he was named as an Australian Human Rights Commission Human Rights Hero.
Wow.
And he's an absolutely remarkable young man and one of the most touching moments of my entire life was when he asked me if he could call me Dad.
Wow.
His own father had died, so he's now my unofficially adopted son. And he rang me earlier this year and said, Dad, I think you're going to be mad at me. I'm going to leave my secure job at the Australian National University, go back to Sydney and work for refugees again. and it won't be so much money. And I said, you'd follow your heart, Zaki. So he's now working in Sydney for the Jesuit Refugee Service. On Monday this week, he rang me to tell me he'd been appointed to an executive position with that organisation. So he's incredibly active.
Fantastic. Fantastic. And he would be about 25 years of age now, Ian?
25, yeah, that's about right.
Yeah.
Excuse me. And it was Zaki that got me, that really prompted me to try to start a RAR, Rural Australian for Refugees, branch in Healesville. So shortly after I'd met Zaki, I asked a group of people there would they form a group, and they have, and we've been working ever since to try to raise awareness of the cruelty that refugees and asylum seekers in Australia are being subjected to, and to help those in emergency situations. And through the money that we've raised, a lot of it is from me playing guitar at St. Andrew's Market. I mean, it must have been $6,000 or $7,000 raised.
I'm going to read just the opening paragraph on the website, which you can have a look after the program, listeners. RuralAustraliansForRefugees.org.au. That's all one word. RuralAustraliansForRefugees.org.au. The pro refugee network is a vast mosaic of overlapping networks, lawyers, church people, human rights advocates, welfare workers, political activists, and ordinary people, from highly skilled professionals with specific expertise to many thousands who have joined a grassroots movement striving to return compassion and humanity to Australia's treatment of asylum seekers. And one strand of that is the RAR, as we call it. So Healesville began, I think, was it about 3 years ago then, Ian?
I think a bit more than that. It'd probably be more like 5 years, I would think, five or 6 years. I might just add, if people are particularly interested in our group, and we would love to have more people involved,
yes,
if they simply look up RAR Healesville Facebook, or the other way around, Facebook RAR Healesville, it will take them to our site, it'll tell them what we're doing, and it'll also give them a chance to buy the CD. Hopefully some of the music we play later they'll like and decide to buy it.
Terrific. No, that's absolutely amazing. And all volunteers, of course, a not-for-profit organisation. And by the sounds of what I've just read, Ian, there's a place in there for everyone, wearing all sorts of different hats, but with the same cause, to raise awareness. In fact, we'll talk about the 10-point plan that you've got with RAR in a moment. But let's RAR, I did a little bit of research, was actually started up in Bowral, and soon after that, Armidale and Aries Inlet in 2001. So that means RAR is celebrating 20 years here in Australia. And now there are some, I think there are some 80 RAR groups all around Australia, Ian.
Yes, there are. And they're all pretty well independent. They do their own thing, even though they're tied to that major overreaching RAR group. So we do independently what we can. I think one of the things that people should know is that although I've just explained Zaki and how he's proven time and time and time again what a valuable member of Australia's society he is, there are 30,000 other refugees in Australia in the same situation as him, and that situation is that they're on temporary visas. And so every 3 years, they have to go up again and get their visas renewed. There's no permanency. There's a constant shadow hanging over their head that they could get returned to the countries where they fled in the first place in danger of their lives.
At great risk, Ian, in most cases.
Well, yeah, but a lot more than that, because these refugees are caught up in an extremely cruel and complex and somewhat bizarre system where they don't get, for instance, they don't get very much government support at all. They're not allowed to get JobKeeper. So you know, they starve. In fact, there was a story on the ABC last week of a refugee mother from Iran and a disabled six-month-old son who was born in Australia, forced to live in a park after the landlord sold their rented property. And they find it enormously hard to get jobs because of their uncertain status. And the Refugee and Asylum Seeker Support Services are stretched to the limit, trying to find enough financial support, find food and accommodation for them. And the United Nations has time and time again condemned our refugee policies as cruel and inhumane. Yet that seems to wash over Australians' minds. And even though Australians are fair-minded people, it all seems to go under the radar. We hear about the horrific cases of the deaths on Nauru and Manus Island, for instance, where people were beaten to death by guards, where they died from inadequate health care or by suicide, according to the Refugee Council. And we hear about the family who were trapped on Christmas Island for years with their two little kids, released just only this year in the community detention. So there are these ones that we hear about in the news now and again, but underlying that is a huge cloud of injustice involving 30,000 people who try to scrape past or scrape through on with virtually no support. As I said, many of them are homeless. And they live in constant fear because they just are given a temporary visa time and time again, no permanent residency. They can't reunite. In fact, only this year, this week rather, the United Nations again, after many, many condemnations over the years, came out and said, well, the policy of not allowing them to reunite with their families is again contrary to international law. And I think what people have got to realise is that even though the government has tried very hard to say these people are illegal, paint them as dangerous, put them behind barbed wire so they look like criminals, these are innocent people who have fled for their lives.
Not from their own choice, Ian.
They include engineers, IT people, parents, mothers, fathers, kids. Who have basically done nothing wrong. And I'm certain that if Australians really knew what was being done by the government, the deliberate cruelty of their policies, they wouldn't stand for it. But the problem is with COVID and all the other issues that are much more in the news, and because of the intricacy and complexity of the Australians' policies, people don't get a full idea of what's been done in the name of their country. And I'm sure if they knew, they just wouldn't stand for it, because Australians do have a sense of fair go.
Yes, Ian, what you're highlighting here, and of course COVID, you know, the virus has taken over, you know, all conversations in the last 12 or so months, and just the awareness. People don't know of the plight, of the scenario that you're talking about this morning. And then when we do know, we sort of hold up our hands and sort of think, well, you know, what can we do about it? What can I do about it? And what you're highlighting this morning is that listeners, that all of us can do something about it, and that one organisation, Rural Australians for Refugees, RAR, and we have our own branch here in Healesville, RAR Healesville, have a look at their Facebook page, are doing something about it, and you can get involved and you can make a difference. We're going to have another song right now from the selection of songs put out by RAR Healesville, and it's called Homespun. It's $20. All the proceeds go to supporting the work of RAR in support of refugees. And our very own Ian Gillespie, who we're talking with this morning, is the guitarist here. And I think we're looking at which one there, Cora? We're looking at number three, which is Angie. There we go. And Ian on guitar. And that was one song from Homespun, a CD, a collection of songs put together by Rural Australians for Refugees, RAR. And you can easily locate a copy of that. Just, for example, go on to RAR Healesville. If you want to send them an email, go to rar.healesville@gmail.com. And you can quite easily pick up one of those CDs. I've been listening to some of the songs, an amazing and easy to listen to selection of music. After the 11 o'clock news this morning, we have Dr. Ianto Ware from Sydney, who's done a PhD thesis, or is doing a PhD thesis, on Australian zines. And together with Claire, Cora will be talking to Dr. Ianto Weir, and they're going to be talking about, well, Australian zines. He is the coordinator of the Adelaide Zine Fair, so that's going to be the focus for today after the 11 o'clock news. But my guest for the moment, my guest on Zoom is Ian Gillespie, and we're talking rural Australians for refugees in Healesville. And for listeners, Ian, who may not have heard of RAR Healesville before, tell us, what have you been up to in the last 4 or 5 years?
Well, since we started, we've held meetings in Healesville with guest speakers to try to raise awareness. We've held vigils out in the street, really, to try to raise awareness, films. And in terms of directly helping people, I think I've reminded all the things we've done.
You put together a great CD.
Well, yeah, that's to try to raise more money so we can do more things. But we've, for instance, taken or helped to take refugee children from the city to Healesville Sanctuary to give them a day out to see the Australian animals. Because there are so many refugee children who don't have computers or the online capacity to be able to study during COVID or even to study in their classrooms, we bought iPads, new iPads for the refugee kids at Dandenong High School. We've sent regularly every month payments off to people who are still held in detention so that they at least have their mobile phones so they can keep in touch with their relatives and their loved ones. We have supported various groups who in turn specifically support refugees in different ways. And even in one instance, although just about all of what we do is to support people in emergency situations in Australia, there's an horrific situation at Cox's Bazaar where a million refugees have fled from Myanmar, where genocide was being committed by the troops there.
Yes.
And have fled to Bangladesh. There are 500,000 children there living in slums with no education. So we've been sending education packs over there.
You've been very busy, Ian. This is all volunteers in the Greater Healesville community.
Yes, it is. And we have a meeting every month online sometimes. Well, it has been online because of COVID. And we're really hoping that other people will join in and take a part and contribute their ideas to how we might support refugees and asylum seekers, how we can make people more aware of the situation and how we can pressure the government into policies that are decent rather than deliberately cruel.
Fantastic. I'll just give your contact details one more time, Ian, which is...
Thank you.
Email is just rar.healesville@gmail.com, or otherwise just go to the RAR Healesville Facebook page is probably the best. Is that right, Ian?
Yeah. If you're online and you go Healesville RAR Facebook, it'll come straight up and it'll have all the details about how to buy the CD, but also how to get in touch with us and to join in on our monthly meeting.
Which is it? A particular day or night of the month that you meet, Ian?
Look, it varies from month to month. At the moment, we've actually just put out a survey asking people what day and what time would suit them most.
Okay.
The next one, I think, is...
Doesn't matter. But that'll all be on your... It's all on the Facebook page anyway.
Terrific.
Uh-huh. So Ian, what are the... This is a silly question, but I'm going to ask you anyway. What are the biggest challenges for RAR at the present?
The biggest challenges is to try to break through to the Australian people the reality of what's happening to refugees and asylum seekers in Australia. Because as I think I said, the policies are so convoluted. They're so complicated. So all of them are cruel that it's very hard. Look, even for me, I have to keep on going online and looking at what's happening now with all these different kinds of visas. Mm. But it all ties back to one thing. The Australian government is determined to treat these people with deliberate cruelty because their excuse is that they want to stop more people coming by boat. But I think that's an argument that just disappeared long ago. If you took all the asylum seekers and refugees in Australia and you put them in the MCG,
yes,
they would fill less than a third of
yes.
the MCG. That's it. If you took them all from Australia wide, these people are for the most part. Well, firstly, they're not illegal. That's the first thing you realise. Australia has signed a human rights, a refugee policy that makes it legal for people to flee to Australia if they're in danger. It's the same way as an ambulance might flee through traffic, breaking normal laws,
yes.
but they're allowed to because it's an emergency situation. Well, it's legal for asylum seekers to come to Australia by boat, by plane, whatever way they can. They are not illegal. And so the government has deliberately, in many cases, lied, has painted a picture of these refugees as dangerous, as criminal types. 97% of the people who have arrived by boat have been found to be genuine refugees.
And have, like the story of Zaki that you shared with us before, have gone on to contribute in amazing ways to Australian culture, society, civil society.
Because he was given an opportunity.
Mm.
But there are 30,000 others living in limbo in Australia who have not been given that opportunity. And they live in tremendous fear. They live in hardship. They have trouble getting jobs. They have trouble basically surviving. Many of them have children. And because of their uncertain status, they don't, maybe all they might have is a driver's license if they're lucky. Mm. Otherwise, they're just a piece of paper saying they're on a temporary visa, and that's very hard for them to convince employers to give them a job. When they are given a job, the surveys indicate that they perform much better, they're as good or better workers than any Australians are.
Yes.
But they don't have enough financial support. They're cut off from a lot of the benefits that Australians would get if they're in emergency situations. And there are support services trying to find food and accommodation for them.
Yes.
And I think one of the things that hasn't sunk in enough is that the United Nations and other human rights bodies around the world have condemned Australia time and time and time and time again for these policies, saying they're cruel, inhumane, and illegal.
And we should be absolutely ashamed, Ian. I'm going to cut you off there because I want to play one more of your songs on the. It's Homespun and it's RAR, Rural Australians for Refugees, and we're going to play number 10, which is Isn't She Lovely, Stevie Wonder. There you go. And this was recorded live at St Andrews. Thank you.
Valley FM acknowledges the traditional owners, the Wurundjeri people, as the custodians of this land we broadcast from. We pay respects to elders past, present, and emerging.
And I'll get the details right for you now. It's 11 o'clock is with Claire James. That's Art Journal, of course, with Cora's on. And Cora and Claire are going to be talking about the Hideaway exhibition that is opening at Yarva. And at 12 noon, Dr. Ianto Ware with Luke Sinclair will be talking. This will be their zine show. And Dr. Ianto Ware is doing a PhD on zines and talking about the Adelaide Zine Fair and a new book, Mother and I. There you go. That's at 12 noon today. And my guest this morning has been Dr. Ian Gillespie, and we're talking Rural Australians for Refugees. And that last song that we just played off Homespun, the CD, is perhaps, Ian, the first thing that people can do in terms of what can people do right now? Well, we can all buy a CD, you know, and the proceeds of the CD, all proceeds, go to support refugees and people seeking asylum. So that's the first thing people can do, Ian. But this is pretty heavy going. What else can people do, people who might have been touched by our conversation this morning?
Well, I mean, the first thing I'd like them to do, of course, is to join Hillsall RIR. But apart from that, the most important thing to do is to change the minds of politicians and to try to change the mind of other Australians all around you, because until the majority of the Australian population condemn Australia's policies, the government, whether it's Labor or Liberal, unfortunately, yes, will keep on with these policies. The government thinks that they're supported by Australians, and I don't think really they are. If Australians knew what was going on, and then Australians' sense of fair go would condemn what's happening. So writing to politicians is important, talking to other people and trying learning about what's happening is important, and telling other people about it.
And there's some. Can I just interrupt you? And there are some templates on the RAR website where you can use those to write to politicians if you don't know how to write a letter to a politician. Sorry, Ian, go on, please.
Yes, I mean, changing the mind of the Australian government is the most important thing to do, to have this all this horrendous cruelty stopped. But then there are things that can be done to try to support the refugees who are already in limbo and living basically in fear on temporary visas. And there are many organisations apart from us that you can look at and join. And if you're local, of course, as I say, we'd love you to join us and take part in the conversation about how to support refugees, how to change the government's policies. And that's an ongoing mission for us.
And Ian, I'm thinking that in some cases, for some people, it might simply be having the conversation with members of your family, with your friends, about the parlous state of asylum seekers and refugees in Australia.
That's right. And that means doing a little bit of research. It means going online saying, you know, Australia policy towards refugees, and looking up the numerous stories, many of which have taken part over the years, and gradually realising what actually is happening to, as I say, 30,000 refugees in Australia in that parlous and cruel situation.
Yes, that's about, listeners, that's about three times the population of Greater Healesville, if we add in Chum Creek and Badger Creek and a few other places, and 30,000 people in that position who, in many cases, Ian, won't get the same opportunity that that Zaki has been given.
No, and if they were given opportunities, as Zaki has proven, they can do enormous things for Australia and for the Australian community. He's proven time and time and time again that he is a wonderful person to have in Australia, yet he's still on a temporary visa and still faces going back to face murder in the country that he fled from. And because of the the policies of not allowing refugees to reunite with their families, he sits and waits while the Taliban approaches his family and fears them being murdered.
Horrendous. Terrible. Absolutely horrendous. Ian, we've run out of time this morning. You've been listening to Ian Gillespie, Rural Australians for Refugees in Healesville and other places. Ian, thank you so much for your amazing insights and your personal story.
Been a pleasure.
Absolutely. And for all of us, it's an awareness that we need to increase and a conversation that we need to have much more often. So thanks so much, Ian. It's been terrific.
Thank you.
And listeners, we'll be back same time next week for another amazing community conversation.